friends. Bet you thought you'd heard the last of us. You thought we would record one episode, drop it, and then disappear into the ether. Wrong. We are back with another episode of What Page Are You On? It me, Bethany Rutter, and I'm here with my good friend and business partner.
It me, Alice Slater. Back once more.
Can you believe it? Two episodes, at least, in the bank.
We're changed boys.
We are changed. We have reformed. We're back.
We've disregarded our sinful ways of not recording podcasts.
For many, many months.
Because podcast-liness is next to godliness.
And we are very godly. So this episode, we're kind of like just over halfway through the year now. And we thought we'd do a little check-in about what we've been reading, especially since we have not been reading for the pod. So what do we read when a tree is not falling in the forest? And there's no one around to hear it.
And really, this probably should have been the episode that we came back with. But we wanted to do the NYT episode while it was still culturally relevant. Forgive us.
We're just chasing the chat. Like, we knew that the NYT thing was more timely and that you wouldn't care about it if we posted it later. So we just had to hop on that. But now we're here for a little chat. How's your reading going this year? How do you feel this has been reading-wise, 2024?
This has been a slow year for me. I remember when we were recording at some point last year. We did some episode last year, didn't we?
Maybe.
I can't remember. Last year or the year before. I mentioned that I was in a bit of a reading rut just because writing was taking up so much time. And sadly, I'm still writing the same book. So I'm still... I feel like it's like Groundhog Day over here. Like, I'm still working on the same novel and my reading is very slow. But I've read 33 books so far this year, which by all accounts is not a small number. It's just less than I normally would have read at this point.
I think I've read an almost identical number of books as you have read this year, which is unusual because I broadly do read less than you. I know, I don't know the exact number, but I use the app Storygraph to record what I read.
Oh, you're a Storygraph girly.
I'm a Storygraph girly. And it tells you, so I set a goal of reading 52 books and it says, oh, you are ahead by blah, blah books. I know for boring other reasons that this is like week 29 and I'm ahead by like 5 or 6 books. So I have read a similar number of books.
Nice.
To the girly herself, Alice Slater.
Every year I aim to read 100 books. I've had the same goal for like the last 5 years. Every year I swing and I miss, but I don't really give a fuck.
Exactly. It's like it literally doesn't matter.
For me, reading is not... I don't really gamify it. Mm. I only keep track and set the goal because that's what Goodreads suggests I do. And I'm like, sure, that's fun. But I don't really gamify it. I keep track because I've kept track since 2009. Mm. I'm not going to stop now. But I would never read with the goal in mind. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't pick shorter books to try and boost my numbers or any of that shit. Like, I just read as the spirit moves me.
Whereas I do set the goal of 52 books because I know I like reading and reading is better for me than wasting time on my phone. And if I do not have a goal of like, you can read one book a week without much effort, then I will just waste time that I could be spending on a hobby that I otherwise like. So that's why I give myself the target of 52 books, because I do think a book a week is manageable for me with the lifestyle that I have and the responsibilities that I have. So that's where we're at. So also, I'm doing okay.
You're quite a good goal-oriented person, whereas I am so gentle with myself. I'm always like, girly, you don't have to do a goddamn thing, which is why I'm still writing the same book 3 years later.
But even though your publishers are like, girly, you do have to do a goddamn thing.
You do which have is a fucking deadline.
A literal contract, a legally enforceable contract.
No, to be fair, just to clarify, because now I feel insecure, I have been working very hard. It's just writing's really hard. Yeah. And I think I very like confidently thought, now that I've gone through the process of my debut, book two will come together much more easily. But the nature of the debut is that I had actually been working on it for many, many, many years before it got to the point of publishing. And it turns out I'm just not that fast of a writer. I'm not as fast as I thought I was.
Yeah, which is completely reasonable. Like, I do think that there is a lot of invisible work being done on books, especially on debuts. So then that experience of writing a debut is not really comparable to writing future books, especially when you do have that literal contractual and time pressure. Like, it's a completely different experience.
It's true.
It'd be like that sometimes.
It do be like that sometimes. But I have still had some time to read some bangers. We sometimes when we do episodes like this, we have like formal lists where we go back and forth, but we're not going to do that. We're just going to be loosey-goosey. We're going to throw out titles, but we will post everything we discuss in our Instagram, like in the little caption of the Instagram post to promote this episode. So if we mention something and you missed what it was, just check Instagram and it will be there.
Unlike Alice, I actually do have a list of things I have particularly enjoyed this year, for the boring reason that we are using my phone to record on, so I cannot look at it for reference. So I can't just look at my list of things I've read this year as easily as Alice can, because her phone is in her hand where it belongs.
As it always is.
As always. So yeah, maybe mine, I will have like five specific recommendations in a way that your chat may be slightly different.
To be fair, well, I just meant that we're not going to like bounce back and forth in the way we did for the last episode.
I think we need to get the ball rolling with one specific book, because we did say we would probably do a whole episode about it, but the book has now come out and we have not done the episode because life got in the way. So I would love for us to begin with what I think will probably end up being my book of the year, which is The Coin by Yasmin Zaher, which I have been so happy to see that it is gaining traction in the world. It is getting review coverage. It is hitting on both sides of the pond. It came out like a couple of weeks ago. It is gorge. Alice, The Coin.
As it well should. So The Coin, it is about a young Palestinian woman who moves to New York. She's looking to like settle down, find somewhere that can feel like home when obviously home is no longer accessible to her. She ends up falling in with this dodgy dude. And I don't actually feel like the premise of what they end up getting up to is as strong as how I would describe it, which is that it's basically this very kind of Moshfegian kind of look at what it is to interact in a world that you exist in somewhat differently to everyone else around you. It kind of reminds me of The Vegetarian.
That's what I've said. I've said it's The Vegetarian meets A Tessa and Moshfegh.
Bang on.
It's exactly that. But it is also its own thing. So it is not derivative of either of those things. But if you liked either of those things, which many people did, this is one for you.
And it just felt so original whilst also being part of this like greater kind of lineage of books about like disgusting women. I'm really glad to see it gaining momentum, and I hope that it continues to grow, because it has all the right ingredients.
For me, one of my favourite things about it, which you can maybe gather from the cover, which I think is so good, the cover is yellow and it has a woman in a kind of extravagant white suit outfit doing a high kick. It's an amazing cover. I'd love to know more about how that came about. But I, as maybe you know, I really like clothes. And my beef with many books is that authors often describe outfits that have never existed in the history of the world that would be completely inappropriate either for the person they're describing wearing them or the situation they're describing wearing them in. Improbable outfits, improbable clothes. Whereas I love The Coin exists so firmly in the real world of clothes, especially luxury fashion. I loved reading it. I loved that being sort of taken seriously in a literary book. I loved it.
Which, you know what? Can I tell you my truth?
Tell me.
I don't actually love the cover.
I know you don't.
Yeah, and I think for the most superficial reason, because it's yellow.
What's wrong with yellow books? Hmm?
Well, listen. No offense.
She walked into that one.
Oh my God. That's it. Pod over.
Friendship over.
Friendship ruined. No, I think that it's the combination of the shade of yellow. I don't know, there's something about it that when the proof came through, my eyes just kept gliding right off it. I didn't even cognitively realize it was a woman doing a high kick. And maybe that's because I have not had an eye test in like 4 years and I can't see shit. But yeah, I found my eyes are bouncing off it.
The image weirdly like both blends into the background and also kind of doesn't. It's quite a dissonant cover, like it,
which does work. And also I do quite like that it breaks away from the kind of dead girl,
yeah,
floppy woman trope, which...
Using a painting from back in the day.
No, I love back in the day paintings. I love that. I stand by that. But the... And also, I feel like we don't have as much of that in UK publishing. I feel like it's quite an American thing.
Yeah.
For fiction, anyway.
But yeah, the, like, yeah, woman like, with her head in a cake. Woman yeah, like, with her head against a wall.
Reclining.
And, a,
yeah. And even though when that trend first dropped, I fucking loved it. And I would see a book with that cover and I'd be like, yes, love it. I think it has been so rapidly overdone because so many fucking books are coming out.
Mm.
There are so many books. You cannot move for new releases. And I'd love to know statistically if there is more fiction being published as of this year compared to 5 years ago, or if it's just that...
It feels like that because we know about it.
Yeah, like, yeah. I'm aware of more publishers, so I'm... I don't know, there's more lists that I'm paying attention to. But anyway, I love that it breaks away from a trope that actually would have been very appropriate for this book.
Mm.
And I'm glad that it's finding its audience whilst bucking that trend.
Yeah. It's so... I think the cover is as unique as the book, and I don't think it's a problem if you didn't like the cover, because whatever.
Yeah.
The book is its own thing.
And also, who am I?
Literally my sunshine.
I thought you were going to say you are literally...
A worm.
Dirt. Speaking of dirt, did you read Clean?
No, but I know you love it. Tell me about
it. So it's by Alia Trabuco-Zeran?
Yeah, I know the cover.
Is that how you would pronounce her name?
Yeah, why not?
Sure. I should have Googled that first. Anyway, Clean. It's got the pink cover with the white suds.
Yeah.
It is so fucking good. And I cannot believe that I read The Coin and Clean almost back to back. I just had one little NF in between, which I'm also going to discuss because I loved it. But Clean is very much like Lullaby.
Yes.
Big Lullaby energy.
Lullaby by Leila Slimani, which came out a few years ago, was a big banger on this pod.
We loved it. And Clean has a similar-ish premise in that it is about a domestic worker working for a affluent family. And
where is it set, please? Is it set in South
Chile.
America?
Yeah.
Chile, okay.
And do you say Chile?
Chile. I don't know.
Chile. Anyway, whatever. And so it's about this domestic worker. She works for a really affluent family. And you know from the beginning that something bad happens, that this child is going to end up dead. And you spend the whole book basically watching this child in peril and waiting to find out what the fuck happens. But also it has this framework that she is kind of, it's told in this very self-conscious narrative where she is talking to someone. And you know that, you basically know that she is responsible somehow.
Yeah.
It is so gripping. It is awful to read and wonderful. And, you know, it really kind of explores, like, the weird intimacy and distance that domestic workers experience. Like, that they are...
All up in your shit, but they're not
yeah,
they're your family.
In yeah. your personal business, but, like, the father barely knows her name. Do you know what I mean? Like, I just thought it's a really interesting look at, like, her class and this role of, like, the worker in the home. It just works on so many different levels. And also, I mean, I fucking loved Lullaby, but Lullaby is based on a true story. And, like, I feel like sometimes maybe, even though it's fictionalized, the arc of it being a very literary novel in translation, plot-wise, that arc, I know for some readers doesn't quite land. For me, it totally did.
Okay.
Like, the book opens with the ending, so there is no more story to tell. You read to the point where it begins, and that's the end of the novel. Obviously, with Clean, there is, like, a bigger question mark over what's happened. So I feel like readers who didn't find that Lullaby resonated with them, maybe Clean will scratch that little itch.
Interesting. Okay, cool.
I can't believe you. I thought you had already read it.
I haven't. I should. I know that I will like it when I read it. What else you got going on?
Oh, okay, well, the non-fiction that I read between The Coin and Clean is actually a book called Deadweight, Essays on Hunger and Harm, by Emmeline Klein.
Oh yeah, did you chair that?
Yes, I chaired it at Dawn Summertown, one of my favourite bookshops in the world.
We love it. We love Dawn Summertown. Love you, Dawn Summertown.
Also, second episode we've recorded this year, second shout out.
For Dawn Summertown, specifically Elizabeth, who works at Dawn Summertown.
We love you, girl. Anyway, yeah, so I chaired this event, which is why, truthfully, I probably wouldn't have read this book otherwise, because it's specifically about eating disorders. Mm. And although, obviously, that's a really important subject matter to read and discuss, it's not necessarily something that
I'm drawn to.
Yeah, I'm particularly drawn to. However, this book, man, like, Emmeline just, she writes about fatness as well. She writes about the kind of a broader scope of what it is to experience disordered eating with a particular focus on things like race, class, and body size. I found it so fascinating. I found it really empowering. I just, as someone who has never really like interacted with this, with eating disorders, but obviously have grown up in a fat body, it just, yeah, it just explained so much stuff to me that I hadn't ever really understood about anorexia, bulimia, binge eating disorder, and my mind's gone blank, the one where people feel very fixated on rules.
Orthorexia.
But how these four are actually all intertwined, that it's not helpful to consider them as separate disorders. And also how the medical, medical fat phobia can really let people down. It's just, I just can't recommend it enough. I think.
Do you have a physical copy that I can borrow?
I do, and I can see it right now on my bookshelf. It's between Joan Didion and that essay collection, Blueberries.
Maybe I will yoink it from
you. Yeah, I'll lend it to you. But it's great. I cannot recommend it enough.
I love that.
And I also found, like, because I was chairing it, I was reading with a pencil and underlining just, like, things that I might want to come back to. And I was underlining stuff almost every page. Like, it's just also beautifully written. She talks about pop culture and, like, celebrity. It's just so well researched, so well visualized. Yeah, an absolute banger. Unexpected banger for
me. Yeah, I love that. I love an unexpected banger. And obviously, in absence of the pod being a way of motivating our reading, I have found chairing is often a vehicle for me to read stuff that, or to give me direction in my reading. So there are a couple of things that I've read this year that I have really enjoyed, both of which have been products of my chairing life. If we are staying in Daunt Summertown, I chaired an event earlier this year with previous friend of the pod, Calla Henkel, to talk about Scrap, which I really think that is one of my favourite books I've read this year.
Oh my god, that makes me feel so happy.
I think about it all the time. I feel like I enthusiastically recommend it to people in a way that, I don't know, yeah, I just loved reading it so much. It is such an audacious book.
Yeah, because it's quite wild, isn't it?
It is so wild.
Because I think I blurbed it. Yeah, I blurbed it. And I messaged the editor and was like, What a wild ride. Like, there's no other way to describe it. Like, it just does not go where you're expecting it to go. And I may be readers who do not read salacious crime novels will perhaps find the ways in which it diverges from what it proposes to be about kind of wild. No, maybe that's inaccurate, because it sticks to the premise. It just goes somewhere really, really unexpected.
So the premise is this artist who is living in a kind of rural area with her girlfriend experiences a kind of professional disgrace that means that she no longer has her job. She comes home from work one day, her girlfriend has moved out, and she thought she was like set up for life, they were going to have children together, like all was going to be well. And someone that she met at a party, a very rich woman, sort of asks her to take on this massive archive of material from her and to create a scrapbook for her husband's big birthday that's coming up. And through the process of creating this scrapbook, for which she would be paid a lot of money that would, you know, help her out economically. And through the process of trying to create this scrapbook for this woman, she becomes fixated on the idea that a murder has taken place, and she sort of wants to go about proving that this has happened. And that is the plot of Scrap, sort of. Yeah.
Sort of. But yeah, it's completely wild in its ambition, I think is the best way I can describe it. Because it does also rely on you being familiar with another book.
Yes.
Which I'm not going to say, because I feel like that's a spoiler. But yeah, it's really good fun. I think it'd be such a great book to read on holiday.
It's such a fun book. And we loved Other People's Clothes, which was her debut. And I feel like this has a lot of similar vibes, but is also sufficiently different that it is in no way just the author doing the same thing again.
Yes, exactly.
I loved it. So I'm really glad I got to read that as part of my chairing life. I would probably have read it otherwise because I liked Other People's Clothes so much, but yeah.
But you know what I think sits nicely alongside that one? And I think, again, I read them in quite quick succession, did I? No, maybe I'm just lying. Plaything by B. Seton.
I do not know this one. Tell me about it.
Apologies to listeners of episode 2. I now have a little dog, so you might hear some dog noises. She just shook her head. It was adorable. But anyway, Plaything by B. Sutton. So, Seton, rather. It has, on the cover, it kind of flips that, you know, like, girl-leaning trope that we were discussing with the coin. But it's basically, imagine the cover of Vladimir, but it's a man. And it's about this woman, a young woman who goes to university to study medicine, and she falls in love with a man that she cannot believe. She just cannot believe that this man would ever pay her a lick of attention. He is so beautiful, she cannot believe it. And it sends her completely insane. So it's a book about jealousy and obsession, but much like My Husband by Maud Ventura, it's like what happens when the object of someone's affection loves them back, but that still isn't enough. And again, it's a thriller, so it goes to some wild places, and I just was gripped by it. I absolutely loved it.
I feel like I deeply relate to this plot. I would read that book.
I know,
like,
as I was
this
saying.
This is so me. Like, this is, yeah, this has been my life.
Yeah, you have to read it. I think you'll love it.
It's completely passing by. Has it come out?
It's out. It's out in hardback.
Okay.
Again, I think I have a copy. I can slide it to you.
I love it when you slide me
this
things.
Is the thing. With us not doing the pod, I'm not sliding you all my bangers.
Yes, true.
So our reading is truly just based on our own path through life.
Yeah,
where the train, although we have met, our book-related paths have not met.
And obviously, with the pod being on hiatus, I feel like that has meant that we've fallen off the radar of publicists in that way. But you are still on the radar as a potential blurber
yes.
of these kinds of, like, nasty lady books.
Which
whereas
is funny.
I'm not, you know, I'm on the radar of publicists for the kind of books that I write, which are not these books.
Yeah, which is funny because that means I'm receiving way more thrillers, horror, crime, stuff of that nature, which I do like. Obviously, of course I do, but I definitely wonder how many more literary novels with a dark edge I've missed out on because they're not seeking out blurbs from crime writers.
Yeah.
Even though I'm universal, bitch.
Yeah.
I can blurb anything.
Of course you can.
She
believe in yourself.
When she lies.
So I have, in general, been reading mostly fiction this year. But I did read a really good non-fiction book that as soon as I saw it, when it came out in hardback, I was like, I'd read that. And now it is out in paperback. I love a paperback, famously. I'm not a hardback girly. Too much responsibility. Doesn't fit into my Uniqlo crossbody bag.
For me, they're too big for my tiny doll
You
hands.
Only have tiny doll hands. Whereas I do have large bear paws, but it's the bag factor. I like to carry a small bag. I like to travel light. Anyway, are you familiar with an Irish non-fiction true crimey book called A Thread of Violence by Mark O'Connell?
Yes, I am.
It's got a kind of like white and orangey cover with like a black and white picture of a man in a bow tie on it.
Yeah, and I
Is that
feel
speaking
like,
to you?
Yes, because did it not win a prize?
Maybe it won a prize.
Or it's been included in something esteemed, and I can't think what.
Well, I read it, and it was great.
Is it good?
I loved it. It's about the author sort of researching this high-profile murder that happened in Ireland, I think in like the 70s, maybe. And as someone who is not Irish, I feel like it was also a really interesting kind of social history of various elements of like Irish life in that time period, as well as just being a really good true crime book. And it was really well written and I loved it. And I'm really glad that I remembered that I wanted to read it. So it is now out in paperback. So I was trying to sort of curate a little list of things I'd read this year that either came out this year in hardback or paperback. And that is one of them. Recommend.
Yeah, I feel like that was also my thinking, but I've read quite a few books this year that are out in hardback later on in the year. But I'm kind of like, what's the value in that? You know, like, if I share
to
it
to you
right
as listeners.
Yeah, to the listeners. That even though, like, all, you know, all mentions of forthcoming books is obviously helpful for those books, are you going to remember, if you hear the book now on the pod, are you going to remember to make a note of it, to pre-order it, to write it down, to read it later? Probably not. So I've tried to also aim for books that are available now.
Exactly.
Including, I think I mentioned My Husband earlier. That's one that I was actually going to bring up anyway. Because it was one of my best reading experiences of last year and it came out in paperback this year. And again, just if you like those kinds of really gripping, character-driven, like dark, literary, domestic novels, Get on it. It's so good. Have we talked about it on the pod, or was that in our post pod?
It was definitely in our post pod life. And also, I just wanted to add how much I enjoyed the event with Maud Ventura that you chaired at the lovely French bookshop in South Kensington last autumn. It was great. And she is such an interesting, compelling interviewee. And I really respect her ability to be able to conduct that in English when it is not her native language. Very chic of her.
And I learned a great fact about international publishing, in that the novel was originally written in French. When Maud Ventura sold it to the American publishers, they asked for a different opening. So the English language edition, we have the American translation. So we have a different opening to the French edition.
We essentially have a different book.
Yeah, like how different would your reading experience be? Because the novel opens with this man saying to his wife, we need to talk later. And that is what basically sends her into this spiral. But in the French version, she just spirals on her own. Just picking up on his vibes, picking up on his energy. He doesn't do anything to instigate it. Isn't that wild?
It's so interesting. And like, this is why I love doing these kinds of events. I just feel like every once in a while, you're going to get a deep, deep gem like that. You're going to come away with a true nugget.
Because otherwise, most people don't read the same book in two different languages.
Yeah.
Why would you?
Literally, why would you?
So yeah, otherwise, maybe we would never have known. Speaking of thrillers, though, did you read Carla by Colin Walsh?
I know people love it. I struggled to get into it and have not tried to go back. I think I maybe tried to do it on audio and I should not have done that.
I think it would be quite confusing to keep track of.
I agree. I think I need to do it in print because I know, like, you love it. I know our good friend Jordan Taylor Jones of the West Kirby Bookshop, like, that's, you know, a massive seller for them because he loves it so much and pushes it so hard. And I was, you know, talking to him about it not that long ago. And I just feel like there is room for it in my life. And I know that once I get into it, I will love it. And I think it was just the wrong format for me.
So this one, it's about a group of friends, three of whom are reunited in their hometown 15 years after the fourth member of their group disappeared, although there are actually six friends in the original friendship group. Which is why I think there are quite a few characters to keep track of. And you kind of jump between these three characters in the present day and then the past narrative in which Carla goes missing. I thought it was great. And I also specifically think that you will like it.
I know, that's
a thing.
It's just
such a Bethany Rutter book.
I agree. And I know that there is room in my life for it. And I just think I made a mistake by trying to do it as an audiobook.
We live and learn.
We live and learn. And not all great books make great audiobooks. And maybe there are some books that I listen to on audio that if I'd read them would not have hit as hard. Vice versa, if you will.
Have you got anything else?
Well, do you know what? Actually, the last book I read, I loved. And I would like to name check that, which is The Late Americans by Brandon Taylor.
Oh.
So, picture the scene. There I am, minding my own business in central London. I had time to kill between doing a school visit and doing something else in the evening, as is my wont. Can't remember what I was doing.
Probably something chic.
Probably something gorgeous and chic. And I remembered that that was the exact weekend that the Aesop Queer Library was in operation. So I bopped from Chinatown, where I'd been eating a delicious mango dessert in a cafe, to Lexington Street, and I joined the queue for the Aesop Queer Library. And I got to the front of the queue, and then I could just choose a book to take with me on my merry way.
So the whole purpose of it is that it is a free, like, they call it a library, but you don't bring them back.
It's for you.
A free book, one per person, and they're like a big range, aren't they, of modern and classic queer books?
I assume chosen by someone in collaboration with some publishers.
Yes.
Don't know the logistics, whatever. So, yeah, I found the array to be quite interesting, but I was also like, I know that Aesop is like chic, so it would lean very literary, but I was surprised to not even see, like, Experienced by Kate Young in there. Or, like, there was just, like, no fun queer books. It was all quite serious. I have to be honest, it was all quite, like, serious. And so my guidelines for what I wanted to choose was, I didn't want a hardback, as we know.
For the aforementioned reasons
of being a hater. It couldn't be a hardback. if it could have been a hardback, I'd have probably chosen the new Brian Washington, which was only out in hardback, called Family Neal. But in absence of being able to choose that, I needed to find a paperback that I didn't already have or hadn't been sent as a proof. Those are my criteria. And so I landed on The Late Americans by Brandon Taylor, because I really like him. I think he's very funny. I think he's very charming. I think he's really clever. I think sometimes he like maybe has historically weaponized that cleverness in a way that is slightly mean, but fundamentally, I am very interested in what he has to say. And I thought The Late Americans was so great. So it's a kind of campus novel assembled of different chapters told about a different person in this kind of loose group of students in Iowa City in different kind of creative programs and their overlapping lives. And it is great. I absolutely loved it. I felt it had really interesting things to say about like class and race and money and friendships. I thought the dialogue was amazing. I absolutely loved it. So The Late Americans by Brandon Taylor, which gorgeously is out in paperback now. That's one of my faves that I've read so far this year.
One of my favourite things that Brandon Taylor does is when he's about to start watching a very popular TV show, he will tweet saying, I'm about to start watching Y'all's Little, and then the title to be like,
Y'all's Little Peachy is in the house.
Hello, Mama. Here is the aforementioned dog.
Brandon Taylor, tell me what he said. You haven't even told me the end of
it. But that's it. So he'll say, like, I'm about to watch Y'all's Little West Wing show. And I think the phrase, Y'all's Little, about, like, these really famous TV shows, just tickles me pink. I absolutely love it.
He really has a way with words. As an author should, but many authors do not.
Okay, she's moving to carpet.
I just think there's something so funny about, like, a natural-born hater that knows how to use that. I love it.
But, you know, the thought of causing that much, like, inane discourse.
Yes.
He, like, will just toss a tweet out.
Yeah.
And then 3 days later, there's TikToks about it. Like, yeah. My anxiety could never. But good for him.
And also, I love the fact that, like, such a natural-born hater who can cause that degree of internet beef is also such a serious thinker.
Yes.
And can write such serious books. Because this was really fun to read, because he has, like, a fun mind, but it is a deeply serious book. Like, it is a proper literary novel. And what I really wanted when I entered the Aesop Queer Bookshop, Queer Library, was something that I knew would be fun, while knowing that, like, none of the books there were, like, for the lulz. That they were quite, like, serious and intense. So, yeah, it was a great pick, and I'm so happy that I got it. Please.
Speaking of serious, I think of Fitzcarraldo as quite a serious publication, like press, right? Like,
yes.
And I finally read, I was about to say I read my first Fitzcarraldo. That's not true. I read some of their short fiction. But I read Alphabetical Diaries.
By Sheila Hetty.
By none other than Sheila Hetty. Have you read it?
I haven't read the Alphabetical Diaries. I think I've read everything else she's written except for that.
Will you read Alphabetical Diaries?
Yes.
Because the premise, I do feel like if you're not on board with the immediate premise, then like there is no point. Like, this is not the kind of book that it's worth giving a go if you think it sounds rubbish, because if you think it sounds rubbish, you've already lost. You're already, lost is the wrong word, because whatever, but so basically, she is a committed diarist. She's kept a diary for her whole life. And she's basically taken 10 years worth of diaries, alphabetized every single sentence, cut it down so it's like a chic little 160 page book, and that has been published by Fitzcarraldo. And I had the best time in there. I loved it. I really love these like slice of life experimental works like that. The critic Max Lu described it as similar to being is his name Christopher McCauley, The Clock?
I do not know. You mean the art piece? Sorry. Yeah.
So this art piece, which is like a movie of
24 hours
of snippets of the time, and I
in different like cartoons and films and whatever, but like every second from midnight to midnight is visually represented. Oh my god, Peachy.
She's now quenching her thirst.
She's staying hydrated.
We love a hydrated queen. You know, she never drinks water, so I am pleased, but
it's because we were talking about Brandon Taylor being a natural born hater, and she's like, I'm a natural born hater.
She's like,
too.
I can fuck this up for you even further. My husband's looking at me so guiltily. This is your fault. You wanted her. Okay, now she's looking. Oh, she's not had her dinner yet. That's why. It's a bit early though. Anyway, Yes. So
the clock. So this is like a literary version of the clock.
Yeah, because the beauty of the clock is you can dip in at any point and you will experience some form of narrative, even though there isn't anything explicitly there. It also kind of reminded me, I wrote this in my Substack. I have a Substack now, by the way.
What is it?
It's just called Alice MJ Slater. I don't know. Alice MJ Slater. But I wrote about this, I also compared it to my experience of seeing the band My Bloody Valentine live, where they do this thing called the Wall of Sound, which is just like 10 minutes of reverberation and like just noise coming out of their instruments. And it is so fucking loud. Like, it makes your teeth rattle in your gums. Can they rattle in gums? Anyway. But in that noise, you start detecting threads of melody.
Mm.
And that is exactly what Alphabetical Diaries feels like. You start to find threads of story, threads of narrative. And even though so much of it just washes over you and is quite forgettable, every so often there's just these little moments that just give you a slap or a tickle.
Mm.
I think it's a really exciting, deeply pretentious, deeply self-indulgent project, but
fun to read.
It was fun. It was interesting. I'm sorry, I'm wanging on now, but you know what else it reminded me of?
Tell me.
Do you remember when your husband did he curated a night of like art, music and readings
with David and Alex in
Tottenham?
Oh, yeah.
And there was that one zine that was just a collection of Facebook instant messages.
Yes.
Over the span of a year.
Yes, I remember that.
And I fucking loved it. And it reminded me of that as well. Like, I love the fact that zine. I wish I could remember the writer's name. I have it somewhere in this messy flat. But again, it was just this, like, slice of what life was like on that messaging platform in that time period. And, like, that does not exist anymore. People don't speak through...
Yeah.
That language, those emojis, that, you know, like, through Facebook in that way. I think it's fun. I love a record.
I feel like, you know, Sheila Hetty is doing interesting things with form in the way that, like, Karma Maria Machado's In the Dream House was an interesting thing with form. Like, I think I have a lot of room in my life for ladies doing things with form, literally.
Me too. I'm now also haunted because... Is it Machado or Machado?
I don't know either,
but...
That's why I feel like we can just say whatever and one of us will be right. And
also therefore,
the pod will in some way be right.
We will have some kind of dignity at the end of it.
So I finished reading The Late Americans only yesterday, and I have not moved on to a new book, but I think it will be I Love You, I Love You, I Love You by Laura Dockrill, because I want to read it anyway, and I am chairing an event with her in a couple of weeks' time, which I'm really looking forward to. But I am listening on audiobook simultaneously to All Fours by Miranda July.
I am desperate to read that.
Well, she reads the audiobook, so I thought it would probably be a really fun way to experience the book.
Never for me, but good for you.
Wait, what?
Oh, I thought you were saying to me, like, maybe listening to it would be fun.
Oh, no, for me. I don't know. Like, why would you not?
I just can't do fiction for the first time. I can reread fiction by audio, but not for the first time.
Yes. Whereas because I didn't want to, famously, didn't want to buy it in hardback.
That is my beef.
So that is why I'm listening to it on audio. And I'm really enjoying it. I have never read any of her other literary works. Tell me, what do you... Oh,
I gasped so hard.
Sorry, I lied.
My throat squeaked.
I was just thinking of The Last Bad Man, which I have not read. But
the First
I have...
Bad Man.
First Bad Man. Yeah. I have read whatever the one before that was.
The short stories.
Yes.
No One Belongs to Him More Than You.
Yes.
Which, when I read them, I did not like them. I found they were too whimsical and quirky, and I didn't vibe with them. Whereas, I do wonder, that was a very long time ago now. I'm quite excited. I've just rebought them. I'm excited to reread them, because I suspect... I will feel differently about them now. I just have a good feeling. Do you know what I mean? I literally cannot remember a single word, but I just have a good feeling. I feel like I'm going to have a good time.
Is the film different to the book? What's her film with peeping back and forth forever?
Me and You and Everyone We Know.
That's it, yeah.
Which is also great.
Peeping Back and Forth Forever. That's all I remember.
That's all you need to remember. Great.
So I'm hoping that by the end of the year, All Fours will probably be a book of the year for me.
You know what I found? When I was, like, looking at my list of books, trying to decide what to discuss, I was like, oh, we're going to have kind of limited time. I'm not going to do, a total list. It's going to be back and forth. But now there's just so many books that I want to, like, name drop.
Well, I've run out of steam. I've told you all of the things that I've read this year that I thought were good.
So does that mean you've not read Headshot?
No, because you were going to give it to me and then we didn't see each other.
Oh, and then we stopped speaking.
And then we just never spoke
again. We just never spoke again. Yeah. Okay.
So I was going to get it from you in some capacity.
So again, Headshot, Rita Bullwinkle is such a Bethany Ratter book if I ever did see. It's about a teenage girl's boxing tournament. And each chapter is about a different competitor. And you get both... Or sorry, each chapter is about two competitors because it's about each match. So you get the background of each character, but then also the blow-by-blow of the fight. And I would never have picked this up, man. Like, I'm not that interested in
boxing.
I don't really read sport books. Like, there's just lots of things about it that would not necessarily appeal to me. But it was really passionately recommended to me by, I think it was Dan of the West Kirby Bookshop. And I kind of was vibing with it. And then I got sent a copy. And I loved it. I just absolutely loved it. Again, like, on a line level, the writing's exquisite. It's so gripping. It has so much empathy. I think that you would love it. I think you'd have a really good time.
It deeply appeals to me. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's a real Bethany yarn. And then just a couple of others. I feel like I don't need to talk about any of these in much detail because I feel like anyone who listens to the pod knows about them. But Private Rights by Julia Armfield, slapped, loved it. Penance by Eliza Clark obviously actually came out this year, right? No, it's come out paperback this year.
Yeah, paperback.
Because they're doing paperbacks as well. Slapped, I loved it. The Ministry of Time by Cullen Bradley, one of the biggest books around right now. Absolute slap. Slapfest. I really loved it. I think it's got a great sense of humour. Again, it's, as we talked about in the last episode, it sits in that like speculative, like sci-fi space. But it's really at the core, it's about the relationship between this woman who is basically a government employee, she's a bureaucrat, and she's tasked with being like, they call it a bridge to this dude who's been kind of brought in from the past through a time machine. It's great. I loved it. And I feel like everyone's heard of it, but I just wanted to name check it because otherwise I feel anxious that I wasn't thorough. And then the only, one more from me. I read Think Again by Declan Wilson as well this year.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my God. I mean, what an experience.
I cannot believe it is happening. Like, what a turn of events.
Oh, you could knock me over the feather. And I had such a nice time in there. Like, it's not really... The only time I ever read that kind of romantic contemporary fiction is when it's written by my friend and business partner, Bethany Ratter. So it was quite an unusual experience for me to read that kind of fiction, but from a different author. And I really enjoyed it. I felt like it was nostalgic, but also it felt, you know, fresh. It is funny, though, that it's so intrinsically a Jacqueline Wilson novel that these, like, women in their late 30s are referring to men as, like, twerks and burks and... What's the word? Twerp.
Yeah.
That's quite fun. But, yeah, I think, like, anyone who enjoyed the girls series back in the day... Perfect little holiday read. You just
Hoomst among us didn't.
No one that I know. Anyway, and then the only other books that I feel like are worth flagging before we sign off, I read one called Big Day Energy by Bethany Ratter.
Who?
And then I read one called Slow Coach by Bethany Ratter because she's in her two fucking album drop era.
Can you believe it?
I cannot. Well. My prolific friend.
It may.
Maybe next episode we can deep dive into those.
Maybe we can. Okay, well, see you next time.
Bye! Bye.